Okay, at this time, please help me welcome our speaker tonight, Steve F. from the Columbus How It Works Group in Columbus, New Jersey.
I'm Steve Fry, I'm a recovered alcoholic. I like to get this out of the way because I do not like speaking at all. I get asked to speak a lot. You guys have an amazing group. I love that it's outside. It's a beautiful country. It's like where I grew up. I said a little prayer, and I'm hoping he'll listen, which he usually does. God, to direct my thinking, to allow me to carry his message and not my own, to have it come from my heart and not from my head. So I believe if I think too much about this and think of what I'm going to say, it's not going to come out, you know. It's not going to come out as God's message. It's going to come out as Steve's message, and Steve's message isn't that good. I've tried Steve's message, and I'll tell you about Steve's message. I grew up, I guess you could say Columbus, New Jersey. I'll just say that. It was a town right next to Columbus. It's called Springfield Township. If you guys don't know where that is, you shouldn't know where that is. It's in the middle of nowhere. It's about 15 minutes south of Trenton, New Jersey. That's our capital. It's a beautiful capital. I spent a lot of time there. My childhood was amazing. I had everything I ever needed in life, everything I ever wanted, pretty much, except for video games. My parents didn't believe in them. And that was like my first resentment when that first video game system came out and I didn't get it. I hated my parents for like a month and hated them until I turned 21 and did a four-step. But yeah, my parents are still together. I live with them right now, which isn't the best situation. I love my parents to death. They're great people. They taught me a lot about being, you know, a productive member of society. I didn't listen to any of it when I was a kid. But, you know, taught me table manners, taught me how to say please and thank you, you know, how to be a gentleman. Taught me if I wanted something, I had to work hard for it. I don't know. They're great people. They didn't beat me. I was never molested as a kid. Not that there's, you know, it changes anything if you were. I just like to say that, you know, I don't believe anything that happened when I was a kid made me an alcoholic. I don't even know how I became an alcoholic. I don't know if it's genetic or not. I just caught the thing. I don't know. I have alcoholism. I know I have it. I know what it is. Thank God I know what it is today. I didn't know what that was for the longest time in AA. And I suffered for it. Let's get to the good stuff. I started lying when I was like 5 years old. And it's a really good skill. I still use it often. I don't like to tell the truth. Just makes everything more interesting when you lie, you know? I didn't feel like I had an interesting life when I was a kid. I didn't have the coolest stuff or the coolest clothes. My family's not poor by any means. They're actually very wealthy. They don't show it, which I hated that. Like, you have all the money in the world. Why aren't you buying, like, yachts and boats so I can, you know, tell my friends that I have all this stuff? I told them anyway that I had all this stuff, and I really didn't. And this was before I picked up a drink. You know, my alcoholism came into play as early as I can remember. With everything, I just lied to everybody. That was the first thing I did. The second thing I became very good at is manipulating people into getting what I wanted from them. I was a master at that. It got me through. It got me through my school years, which was, you know, really tough for me. I couldn't stay in school. I got really good grades in school out of fear, mostly, of what my parents would think of me. Not because I wanted to. I would rather, you know, goof off in class and, you know, look at girls and, you know, try to pick up the prettiest girl in the room, which I was not very good at. I'm still not. I'm like the awkward type. You know, I have very bad social anxiety. 12 steps help a lot with that, instead of God. And I was always this awkward kid. You know, you've heard this like a million times. Something was missing, blah, blah, blah. You know, I just didn't feel comfortable in any situation I was in, not even with my family. And, you know, I was very close to my family and still am. But I never felt like a human being, I guess you could say. So I would lie a lot and manipulate and, you know, steal, do all these things. I had my first drink when I was like 6 years old. I took a sip of my dad's beer and like almost threw up. No like spiritual experience happened or anything. My first experience with that freedom from my crazy brain, which my brain worked kind of like this. When I was in school, I would have conversations with other people without them not being there. Like, I know this person is going to say this to me, and I'm going to say that back to them, and then they might say this, and then I'm going to call him an a-hole, and, you know, he might do this, and, you know, I would make up events that never occurred. That's how my brain worked. It was all over the place, and I was, like, completely insecure and full of fear and just really nervous and I don't know, it was awkward. My first experience with being free from that is I had this leafy green substance of alcohol, and my brother was doing it. I have an older brother, and I still love my brother, and, you know, I really looked up to him and all his friends. I guess I was like 11 or 12, and, you know, I take a hit of this stuff, and like 5 minutes later, I'm laughing, and I'm eating a whole box of cookies, and I throw up, and like I can talk to these people, and they accept me, and they're laughing at me, I'm sure, because I'm acting like an idiot. But, you know, I felt a part of, and I felt like I didn't have to lie to them, and I felt like, you know, this is all right. You know, this is pretty cool. And I never felt that way before. I really, like, never. Like, not as far as I can remember. So I made it a point, like how most of us do, to make that my number one priority in life at 12 years old. And at 12 years old, you can't really get your hands on a lot of this stuff all the time. So, you know, I did it here and there, and I always looked forward to it. If I knew I was going to be doing this stuff by the end of the day, my day was so much better. It was just so much better. I felt all right. Like, nobody bothered me when I was in school, and I didn't care about the teacher, like, picking on me and asking me to share. Yeah, I'll share. You know, I'm getting high tonight. This is awesome. So I had that experience very early on, and I made it a point to do this as often as possible. And, you know, I found other forms, and alcohol is, you know, it's part of my story, but it's not the whole part of my story. Out of respect for AA, I won't talk about the other substances. I'll just, you know, talk in general terms. I guess around middle school, I was a daily drinker, which was fantastic for me. As high school, like, I went to a regional high school, so I didn't like people as it was. I had like two friends that, you know, I could tolerate for more than an hour. And regional high school, I went, my graduating class, I didn't graduate, but what would have been my graduating class was 450 kids. So drinking, you know, was good for me. So I would drink before school, like I would drink on the way to school on the bus, and it would get me through school. So I learned these, you know, these skills. I learned how to just not completely not be a part of life at all. And my grades started to suffer and all these things started to happen. You know, minor consequences that I'm completely willing to pay. And my parents weren't really on my back yet. And, you know, I didn't have girlfriends because, like I said, I'm like this awkward kid and I can't, you know, I can't get into any relationship, let alone with, you know, a person of the opposite sex. That's just too foreign to me. So, I don't know, there's really not much to tell about my drinking. I drank alcoholically, I guess you could say, from 13 to 21 when I got sober this time, with periods of sobriety in between that I'll talk about. Like I said, I dropped out of high school as soon as I turned 18. I was going to fail, so the obvious option was to drop out and go to night school, which is what I told my parents, and I never went. It was just an excuse to get out of the house. And things started to happen to me. Like, my parents didn't really like what I was doing. They didn't really approve that I would, you know, drink and drive, or, you know, come home and drunk and break stuff in their house. And I was just a mess. And I didn't really understand why they were getting so mad, because I thought, you know, I was all right. I had a job. You know, I worked real hard. I was a landscaper. I got paid to do nothing. I just told people what to do that were in my truck, and I would sit and drink. But I don't know, it really bothered me that they were, they were so angry with what I was doing. You know, I just didn't understand. Like, it seemed normal to me to do this stuff. And, I had the same mentality as most people have when they drink. You know, I'm only hurting myself. I'm not hurting anybody else. I know that's very untrue today. Because I hurt just about everybody around me. I like a part in Bill's story where he says, you know, there's a line in there where he says, my drinking took on more serious proportions. As that happened to me around, like, 18 years old, I would start not showing up at home for weeks at a time, and then it started to be months at a time, and then I didn't show up for an entire year. And I didn't really care. I had a cell phone. My parents would constantly call me, and I would just hit the ignore button because I didn't want to talk to them. Friends were worried about me, and, you know, I had a girlfriend at that time, and she, you know, said, Steve, you got a drinking problem. You know, you got to slow down. Everybody was telling me I had a drinking problem, and I just didn't see it. I didn't see what was wrong with it. You know, it seemed normal to me. I could function when I was drunk. Sorry. I, like, get stuck sometimes. All right, anyway. I was this daily drinker. I'm traveling around with this band. I don't know if you guys heard of Fish, but I used to travel around and follow this band all over the place and not come home. And, I could do whatever I want, and it was great. You know, nobody was telling me what not to do because, you know, they were all doing the same things. And I had arrived. This was the place for me to be. These are the people I need to be around. And it seemed very normal to me, and I had a great time. I had a very, very good time. It was actually I still consider it one of the best times of my life. Saw the whole country. I've been to, like, every city in the United States. Don't remember half of them, but it was fun. And I met a lot of interesting people. And then I came home, and I was still living that rock star kind of life without being a rock star. Like I said, a lot of the people that were around me and the people who loved me didn't really like what was going on, and I just couldn't see, you know, I couldn't see what the problem was. It just seemed so normal to me. Like, they, You know, you don't really understand, Mom. Like, when I have this in my body, it just, you know, I feel okay. I can actually breathe. You know, I can actually talk to you when I have this in my body. Which was completely a lie because I was, you know, the blackout drinker type, so I would just get completely obliterated and couldn't talk to anybody. But, you know, I was very, very selfish. What they say in the four steps, selfishness and self-centeredness, that we think is the root of our problems. I don't really think anymore. I know that's the root of my problems. I'm just selfish to the core. I can't see that I'm hurting anybody. If you're not giving me what I want, you're not in my life. If you don't have booze around or money that I can buy booze with, I'm not. I don't want to have anything to do with you. And I hurt a lot of people that way. I didn't do it consciously. I didn't do it because I wanted to. It's just what happened. And I became this, I wasn't welcome really anywhere. I would get kicked out of my parents' house and go live with one friend. And then their parents would get upset and kick me out of that house. And then I would go to another house. They would get upset and kick me out of that house because I was stealing stuff. And, you know, this whole process continued. And I would just bounce to place to place to place to place. And somewhere about a year of this, it kind of got exhausting to me. Because I became homeless. Didn't become exhausting. I just had no money and no home. So it became to that point where, all right, I guess I should do something. I didn't really want help. I knew my parents would let me back in if I went to this, you know, rehab or detox thing. So I'll go do that. So I started doing the rehab shuffle or whatever you want to call it. I would go in and it was like a vacation. I don't know if you guys hear a Carrier Clinic. I actually work there right now, but I would go to this place, and it was amazing, and nice bed. I mean, it wasn't nice, but it was nice to me, because I didn't have a bed, and like, you didn't have to go to groups. You know, they require you to go to groups, but you could sleep all day. They weren't going to kick you out, because they wanted money, and they had great food. It's not so great anymore, but you know, it was like a vacation to me. They'd give you all the drugs you wanted, and I would just stay high the entire time I was there and eat and get my weight back up and go out and do the same thing. And, you know, my parents become angry enough, I would go back and do, you know, keep this cycle going. So I rode that train as far as it would last. And, I don't know, somewhere in there, something happened to me where I just wasn't, I don't know, alcohol wasn't really working for me anymore. It wasn't doing the same thing that it used to do. I used to be able to, you know, have a six-pack or two and, you know, be okay and be able to go to sleep. And that was, like, my main goal at the end, was to actually be able to go to sleep and, you know, get a good night's sleep, because I never could. My brain would keep me up. And something happened where I just couldn't get enough in me where I was, you know, able to relax and shut my brain off and not feel guilty about what I was doing. So like I said, I didn't intentionally harm all these people, but I did feel bad about it. I didn't want to. I didn't want to see my mom cry. I didn't want to see my dad cry, which I've only seen my dad cry twice in his life. Once when my grandfather died, and once when I came home, you know, wasted. And it's not a nice thing to see. And I played it off like I didn't care, but I really did. I just got tired of it. I don't know, I felt like I had to do something different. I knew I had to do something different. I just didn't want to feel the way I was feeling anymore. Didn't necessarily want to stop drinking entirely. That was not in my mind at all, but I did not want to feel just so crappy. Like I couldn't do it anymore. So they gave me an option the last time I was in this resort. And my counselor, he was a huge monster of a human being. He was real skinny, but he was like 7 foot tall. And he sat me down. He was like this real hardcore counselor. And, you know, he cursed a lot. I like people like that for some reason. I don't really like him anymore, but I liked him at the time. Like, he was a real straight shooter. I liked that. And he's like, Steve, I'm going to give you two options. Me and your dad came up with this. And I'm like, all right, great. Put out two pamphlets right in front of me. One was a picture of the city of Delaware. And one was said, like, South Florida on it with a waterfall and, like, sunny skies and palm trees. And this was in December, like, right after my birthday. There was snow on the ground. So I'm like, all right, yeah. Going there. I can get sober there. I know I can. You know, I can get my life back on track in that kind of place. So the next day, I'm on a plane to go to Florida. Mom packed my bags for me, which turned out to be an embarrassing event when I got to the place, because they, like, search everything. I had a resentment against this guy for the longest time. There's one of the techs there. He meets me at the door, you know, welcomes me. I'm starting to get, like, ill because I don't have anything in my body and I'm not feeling too well. We get in this place and all the patients are getting out of group. There was 90 people in this place. And they're all walking down the hall as he's going through my bags. And when they're all walking down the hall, he said, "Well, what, did your mom pack this?" I'm like, ugh. You know, there's a pretty girl walking by and I'm like, I have my hands in my face. I'm just completely embarrassed. So for the next 3 days, I detoxed because I was really good at manipulating detoxes into giving me, you know, everything I could possibly have and more. And if they weren't going to give it to me, I was going to throw a fit and then shoot me up with something. You know, I knew how to do that. So I would just stay, you know, comfortable level, which turned out bad in rehab because they don't give you anything. And first night I'm there, I wake up and I throw up on my roommate, which was another awesome moment. I don't remember the first 3 days. I remember that because I was completely embarrassing. He was real nice, though. He didn't, you know, he helped me clean it up. I was just amazed. I just laid back down and he cleaned up the mess. I didn't even care. Rehab was interesting. I learned a lot about self-help. I learned a lot about meetings and that I was supposed to go to a lot of them. I sort of listened to them. Told me to get a sponsor. And, you know, they had this whole, like, checklist of what you're supposed to do, and I did it, sort of. But I did it to the point where they really believed that I was actually doing this stuff, and I became community leader, which was awesome for my ego, like, because I was, you know, I felt like I was the boss, and, you know, I was running groups, and, you know, we had to write these goodbye letters, and I would write poems to people and, like, send them off in, you know, stylish way. And I felt really good about myself. So I thrive in a place like that. You know, there's counselors, and, you know, they're telling you what to do, and they're telling you what time to get up. And, you know, I can manipulate that pretty well and make it look like I'm really sober and I'm really doing what I'm supposed to be doing. And it worked. I was in rehab for like 4 or 5 months. But as soon as I got out, something happened to me. Like I drank was what happened. But like... You know, I was out of my safety net. Like, that was safe for me. People telling me what to do. You know, like, jail was... I've been to jail so many times, not for any length of time, but it was safe. Like, I knew I couldn't get anything, so I was okay. As soon as I got out, I drank. I didn't relapse for, like, any length of time. And then I started going to these meetings, which I've been to before. Let me back up, because I just thought of this, and I make it a point to say this, because... I don't know. I think it's important. First time I experienced AA, I was 16 years old. And I walked into a women's meeting. I didn't know it was a women's meeting. I just picked, like, you know, I did that random, I'll go here. It's the closest one to my house. I didn't know the W meant women only. So I went there, and there's six women sitting in a circle. And it's one of those round robin meetings. I don't know if you're familiar, but everybody talks. And I don't remember what anybody said. I don't remember what I said. Left. Didn't go back for 3 years. Next time I went to a meeting, I go to the Sister Fellowship, NA. And there's a room of like 100 people. And I'm in there, and I'm at that point, like I said before, that, you know, I don't necessarily want to stop drinking, but I want to stop feeling the way I do. And I get in there, and I can't stop crying, and I'm like, I'm just a mess, and my hands are in my face, and there's, you know, there's just liquid coming from every orifice in my face, and I can't look anybody in the eye. And they have, like, the chip system there. So they're like, white chip for surrender. I go up and get it, and I can't look the guy in the eye and go back, sit down. Meeting ends. I walk outside, and I'm just, you know, I'm the same way. Crying. I'm miserable. I don't know what to do. I'm scared. I'm smoking a cigarette. I'm there for about 20 minutes, and I'm just watching. There's a group over here of people talking. There's a group over here of people talking. There's a group over here of people talking. And there's me. I'm just sitting there smoking. I wait for like 20 minutes. I don't know what I was waiting for. I guess for anybody to acknowledge that I was there. Nobody didn't. That kind of bothers me. In a meeting like this, that doesn't happen. In a meeting, I'm not saying that our meetings are like, oh yeah, I am. I think my meeting's like the best meeting on earth. No offense to you guys, this is a great place. But I make it a point that that doesn't happen in my meeting. If I see somebody who's new, if I've never seen them before, I go up and at least say hi. If they don't want to listen to me, that's fine. If they don't want to hear about this thing called recovery, that's fine. That was my second experience with any 12-step program. So, needless to say, I was a little turned off. And this was in my memory when I went back. Florida was a little bit different. Everybody was real happy there. And they were all talking about God and the 12 steps, and I didn't really want to hear any of it. The only suggestion I followed was go to a meeting every day. I followed that real well. Went to like 3 a day. And about 9 months... This is after I'm out of rehab. I'm clean, or dry, as I like to call it, and I want to shoot myself every day. I don't know why. I'm completely miserable. I'm working at a detox, and I just feel like a fake person. I'm telling people about recovery, and I'm not doing any of it myself. You know, I'm telling people about the big book and all these slogans that I can rattle off, and I can rattle off quotes from the big book like nobody's business. But I don't believe in any of it. I'm telling people to do this stuff, and I'm not doing it myself. And that same thing started to happen. My head would hit the pillow. I couldn't go to sleep because I would start thinking about all the stuff I did in my past. And it just tortured me. So I turned to the one thing that worked, sort of, which was this like rock-like substance that was really white. Or yellow, and it's really great. You, like, you sell all your possessions, and you know you're completely paranoid, and you just can't stop doing it. And so I started doing that, and I lost my job, and lost where I was living, and the girl I was with, and you know everything within like 3 days. I was homeless again. And something happened. I was I went out one last time, and all my friends were looking for me. I locked myself in this hotel room, and these two angels came and got me. I didn't see them as angels, but I really believe they're angels. They're Broward County Sheriff's Department. They came and got me out of the hotel room. And I wasn't like mad at that point. Like, I didn't even know what was going on. I was completely out of my mind. And they handcuffed me. I'm like, all right, I'm going to jail. I'll be all right. And they take me to the psych hospital because apparently I tried to, like, cut myself or something. And went to the psych hospital, and I'm, like, screaming at the intake guy, and I'm going nuts. anyway, in the psych hospital, I remember at this point, and I'm leaving a lot of stuff out. I'm sorry, I like get off track sometimes, but at this point, I've been in AA enough, and I've done somewhat of a program enough to know that, well, not to know, but to believe somewhat that there is a God, and He might be watching out for me, because I'm not dead yet. And I said my first honest prayer that night. I got on my knees and I said, God, please help me. Nothing happened. I woke up the next day and this beautiful woman picked me up. And she took me back to our apartment on the beach. And I had like two options. I had a pocket full of cash. I know what I can do with that. Or I can go to this clubhouse, which I used to go to. Didn't have a car, so I walked to this clubhouse. I'm like, all right, I'll go here. I'll stay for, you know, one meeting, and then depending on how I feel, I'll do what I want. And I meet this guy who I was amazed with this guy. Like, I was almost obsessed with him. He's a big biker dude, and he had a bright yellow chopper, and he always had the most gorgeous girl in the room, and he always had this giant smile on his face. And his eyes were, like, glowing. I knew this guy was really happy. Didn't really like what he was sharing about. I knew he believed it, but I didn't really believe in it. But something attracted me to this guy. When I got to the clubhouse, I met him outside. You know, I'm smoking, my head's down, and he's like, Steve, how you doing? I'm like, yeah, I'm not so good. He's like, yeah, I can see that, and I heard. For some reason, I asked this guy to sponsor me. I said, you know, Danny, would you be willing, you know, to sponsor me and go through this work? He's like, yeah, finish smoking, we'll go talk about 1, 2, and 3. Which has never happened to me before. I've asked people to sponsor me before, not because I wanted to, because I wanted to do the 12 steps, but they never, like, got to work right away. They would always do this thing, like, you know, call me tomorrow, go to a meeting tomorrow and then call me. And I would, and they're like, all right, go to this meeting and then call me. Just nothing would happen. And so I go up to this little room. I'm talking to this guy, and he starts explaining these things that I've never heard before. I've read them, but I've never really comprehended what this stuff was about. He starts talking about the doctor's opinion that I have this allergy to alcohol or substance or whatever I'm doing at the time. And once I put it into my body, I can't stop myself from putting it back down. I can't tell you when I'm going to put it back down, which made a lot of sense to me because I never could. I saw my brother do it and continue to do it, and he takes a couple drinks and, you know, he stops and he drives home and he goes to sleep and he's all right. I just never understood that. He started talking about this other part, this mental obsession that we have. That with or without a drink, I'm pretty much doomed without spiritual help. Like, I describe it as like mental terrorism. Like, it just, my brain is completely going a million miles an hour in every which direction all the time without this substance in my body. So without a drink, I can't tell you when I'm going to pick it back up again. I always do. I never know when. The longest I lasted was 9 months, and like I said, I wanted to shoot myself. Thank God I decided to drink instead. Then he started talking about this spiritual malady I have. And I'm not going into grave detail, but I just want to, like, point out that this was the first time that I actually related to somebody in AA. I never did before. Like, yeah, I could relate to some of the stories because I did some of that stuff, but most of the time it was just, it was a whole long, drawn-out war story, which I just did, and I'm sorry for that. I went way too long with the crap. I tend to do that sometimes. But I never really, really related to somebody and really, like, grabbed my attention. So I was like, yeah, yeah, I did that. That's all right. Whatever. You know, well, no, I was never raped in prison, so you're not like me. I can't be an alcoholic. I don't understand the, I understand the war stories, you know, or, you know, telling your story from the podium, but other than that, it doesn't make any sense to me. If I'm in a room with your people and it's an open discussion meeting, I'm going to talk about God, because that's the real solution here. Everybody knows how to drink. I know how to do it real well. But I don't know how to stay not drinking or stay sober. So anyway, he started talking about this spiritual malady that he described as restless, irritable, and discontent, which I am on a daily basis. I just can't live with myself. I can't go to sleep. I can't go to work without being completely resentful at everybody. Full of fear. I'm back to that awkward kid again. Can't look anybody in the face. Can't have a normal conversation. And he really caught my attention. Again, I didn't really fully believe that any of this was going to work. But I did it anyway. I went through the first three steps, and I'm not going to describe them. Basically, we got to the third step, and he asked me if I was, you know, ready to make a decision. And I said, you know, a decision to do what? He's like, you know, think it as a decision to just do something different, to actually try something different, go through the rest of the work. You know, I'm not telling you to have complete faith in God at this moment, because it's not going to happen. But he guaranteed me a spiritual experience if I went through the rest of the work. And like, I didn't believe him at all. I thought this guy was crazy. I felt horrible at this point. You know, I'm starting to detox and like feel sweaty and shaky, and you know, I'm not feeling good. And he's like, "All right, get on your knees." I'm like, "Whoa." He's like, "Relax. I'm just gonna say a prayer. So get on our knees." I'm holding this guy's hands, and I'm real uncomfortable. And I know he can feel me sweating, and I'm like, I'm thinking that, you know, he's thinking, "Oh my God, this guy's sweating on my hands." Like, you know, all this stuff is going through my head. And then we start praying. We say the third step prayer, and I'm repeating after him. I don't know what happened, man. I really did not want to feel the way I was feeling. I don't know if I said this prayer honestly. I don't even know what it meant. But I just did not want to feel the way I was feeling. And I had just the slightest bit of hope that this guy may be able to help me. And I got up off my knees and I couldn't stop laughing. And I felt this overwhelming sense, like this warmth. It's giving me the chills right now. But I don't know. I can't explain it. I could try, but I can't. I couldn't stop laughing. I couldn't look this guy in the face without laughing, and I didn't feel so bad anymore, and I felt like it was going to be all right. And this was about 6 hours after I was out of a psych hospital from almost destroying my heart completely. And from that day, it was the first day, it was March, well, I say March 25th, it was somewhere around there, I don't know my exact sobriety date, it was March 25th of 07. Since that day, I haven't obsessed about using alcohol or any other form of alcohol, which is amazing to me. I know today what that is. I had what they call a spiritual experience or a psychic change, spiritual awakening. They all mean the same thing. And right after that, he gave me an outline of 4-step. And that day, I wrote my 4-step. After I was done writing my 4-step, I sat down with him the same day and I did a 5th step. And those two things, like 4 and 5, it's just such an amazing experience to me. Even when I do it now, as I've done multiple 4-steps. I just really found out what a selfish bastard I was. Excuse my language. But like, I really saw, like, this is who I'd become. I thought I was a man this whole time. And what I was looking at was not a man at all. I was a coward, a liar, a cheater, a thief. You know, just a complete a-hole. And my sponsor let me know it. And I didn't care. Like, I was just floating that entire day. I got up to step 9 my first day sober. Which a lot of people, and I'm glad you got, you know, I know a lot of you guys are like-minded, you know, I share that at a lot of meetings around me, and people laugh and like actually tell me not to share that. And it amazes me. The big book tells me that if my mind is clear enough, I'm ready. I'm ready to take certain steps. I don't have to wait. I don't have to wait 6 months. It doesn't have to take me a year to do my fourth step. You know, my mind is clear enough to understand this, I'm ready to do it. And that's what happened to me. I really want to take the last 10 minutes to talk about God and helping other people, because that's really what this is all about for me. Like I said, I don't like speaking, but whenever I get asked to speak, I don't hesitate. I say yes, unless I have something that somewhere that I really need to be. Otherwise, AA saved my life. More importantly, God has saved my life. And I can see that very clearly. Me and Steve were talking about it on the way here. I mean, I really can't get enough of it. I don't shy away from talking about God. I just don't anymore. I believe in my heart that God exists and He has me. And He's always going to have me if I continue to do His work, you know, as well as I can do it. I had this experience. I've never really stopped. I've had, little breaks in my sobriety, I guess you can say, where, you know, I kind of slack off a bit and I feel the consequences, where my prayer is not on point, where I'm not, you know, actively trying to help other people in any way I can. Not just alcoholics, outside of AA too. And I suffer for it. I don't feel as well as I can feel. But 99% of the time, I'm like floating. It doesn't even seem like I should feel this good. It really doesn't. It just amazes me how good you can feel by the very small amount of work that I do. It's not like I'm doing this stuff. Well, I am doing it 24/7, but like, you know, actually being in AA and sponsoring people and, you know, prayer work and meditation, it doesn't take that too much time out of your day. So if you're worried about your, you know, completely busy schedule getting messed up, it's not, trust me. It'll actually make it better. The biggest thing for me I can see is that God has really changed my perception of, you know, everything I view in life. Changed my perception at work. I don't dread going to work anymore. You know, I don't like it all the time. I work at a psychiatric hospital. You know, at this moment, I'm kind of in between jobs. It can get rough. It's a very good test of my character defects to see if they're in check. Psychotic people don't care about the way you feel if you're having a bad day. They'll spit on you anyway. But I mean, I get, you know, I've worked at the detox that I used to go to frequently, and, you know, I get to share my experience with other people. And it's just amazing that I get to bring, you know, I get to bring God's message wherever I go. And I really try to do that. No matter where I am, I try to bring it. Not just in AA, you know, even the grocery store. Like anywhere I am. You know, I just try to help God's kids. The biggest part of my recovery is, you know, intensive work with other alcoholics, which I'll admit I don't do. I don't even know what the word for it is. I don't do it perfectly. I don't think anybody does. I feel like I can do more sometimes, but, you know, they say to give this away. If I want to keep it, I have to give it away. If I'm still, you know, in that mentality, you know, this is mine, I got it, I'm going to keep it for a while and hang on to it, I'm still taking. I'm still a thief. If I'm not actively giving this away, I'm still stealing, you know, in some sense of the word. You know, I'm supposed to carry this message to other alcoholics and addicts. Give them the same freedom that I was given, you know, freely. I don't like doing it all the time, but I know when I do it, I feel that much better. You know, not for myself even. I feel that much better that I'm actually, you know, I'm actually helping this person. Like, they actually, you know, they're actually listening to me. They're actually trying to make themselves better people, which is great. I had this one guy I was sponsoring. It makes me cry every time. I get all, like, I guess it's because I work in psych. Like, all the crazy people are, like, attracted to me. And maybe I'm crazy myself. It could be, like, the long hair, and I fancy myself a rock star because I play guitar and I sing. But, like, I get some really insane people that, like, can't read and have no teeth and, like, bottom of the barrel. No, maybe I'm judging a little bit. But anyway, I'm working with this guy, and we're sitting outside, and, you know, I'm going over exactly what my sponsor went over with me, you know, four years ago or so. And I'm explaining the doctor's opinion, and he's just, the whole time, he's like in tears. He's like, thank you. It's like, nobody's ever told this, you know, nobody's ever explained this to me before. And this guy has been in and out of AA for probably longer than I've been alive. You know, it gets to me to see, and I don't know what that guy's doing. Oh, Steve knows more about him, but, it's my buddy Steve, by the way. I want to thank Steve because he took the trip with me, and thank Jeff for asking me to speak. But just, I don't know why people would want to miss this. I get to see miracles every day, every single day. It's amazing to me. You know, not just myself, but I see other people and myself, the guys I sponsor, even if they don't stay sober, because a lot of them haven't. I don't have a very good success rate, but just to see that light come on in somebody's eyes is completely worth it to me. Whether it's 1 in 100 or 1 in 1,000,000, just to see it that one time, a guy actually grabs it and is like, has that aha moment, and then to see him like a week later sitting down with another alcoholic with his book open, you know, he's got his finger in there. He's like, you see? It's an experience you don't want to miss. I promise you that. If you guys don't have an experience with that, get with me, get with my friend Steve, get with Jeff, get with some of the other people I met here tonight that I know are doing this deal. And, you know, ask them. Don't have to suffer anymore. I'll say one last, I mean, there's nothing about wanting this program. It has nothing to do about wanting it, needing it, none of that stuff. It's all about what I do. If I'm not doing this stuff, I wouldn't have drove an hour to come in the middle of nowhere and speak for you guys. Which, I know you didn't enjoy it, but that's all right. Like, I'm enjoying myself. Like, my hands are a little sweaty, and I'm nervous still. I don't know. I want to thank you guys for allowing me to carry God's message to you. And God bless you all. Thank you. Thank you.